count on us to be talking local. Rutherford Issues with Brian Parrott.
Welcome back into the program. You're listening to Rutherford Issues on WGNS, and time to find out about some of the great things going on at the local primary care and Hope Clinic. And Vivian Besong joins us here in studio, and Sean Gilliland, and we're going to find out about some of the great things going on. Sean, I know Vivian's going to do a lot of the talking here, but it's a really unique opportunity, really unique here in our community, I think, for many reasons.
Well, we really are the only full-service provider of care directed towards those who don't have any insurance. I mean, our mission is to provide a medical home for patients that don't have insurance, and also for what they call the underserved in our community, those with 10 care and Medicare that may be having a hard time finding a primary care provider.
And it's amazing how many folks are out there that are in that situation.
Yeah, we've got new patients coming in every day, and a waiting list really to get in for our uninsured care, and doing everything we can to get those folks in quickly.
Vivian, I know that you actually are very new to the Primary Care and Hope Clinic as well, aren't you?
I am. I started there the 1st of January, and it's a new position for the clinic. I'm their health and diabetes educator.
So, gosh, that sounds like could be just about anything, right?
It could. I'm a registered dietitian, so primary focus would be nutrition, and we have a large percentage of patients with diabetes, whether it's diabetes 1, diabetes 2, and then pre-diabetics. Mm-hmm. So
The Primary Care and Hope Clinic is, and I know we're going to really hone in on diabetes education today and talk about some of the workshops, but who is eligible? How do you find out? I guess maybe that's one of the biggest questions you get at the Primary Care and Hope Clinic, Sean.
It is. I think, you know, it's been around since 1992. We'll celebrate our 20th anniversary next year. And a lot of people know that we're there for the uninsured patients, and we still run into folks who don't know about us, but that word is getting out. A lot of folks don't know that we also are accepting 10 care and Medicare patients, and I visited with some doctors, primary care doctors, last week who have capped out and maxed out their Medicare patients and really didn't even know that they could refer them to us. As far as who's eligible, uninsured patients in Rutherford and Cannon County, we've expanded to Cannon County a couple of years ago, can apply for service there at the clinic. We have a social licensed social worker who serves as a case manager to help out with other things and verify eligibility, and fees are charged on a sliding scale based on income, so we'll need to set up that appointment to get some income information and from the patients, prospective patients. Insured patients who have 10 care or Medicare, or even about 10% of our patients have other private insurance, can come by and just schedule an initial appointment to get in with them. You see?
You know, I know of a few who like the providers and maybe have gotten insurance after they use the Primary Care and Hope Clinic as their primary. They just want to stay because they're comfortable with the care that they've been getting there.
That's right. We've got a great staff of highly qualified, highly trained nurse practitioners led by an MD, and they have quite a following and a lot of people who come just to want to see them regardless of their insured status.
We are talking today about the Primary Care and Hope Clinic, and one thing that has changed in the last 20 years, and that's, number one, hard to believe it's been 20 years, but that facility, which I know is, what, how old, maybe a couple of years now.
2 years, that's right.
But it still looks sparkling new out there, and gosh, what a great location right by the hospital. That's kind of the new medical area here in town.
It is. The Hope Clinic has benefited from the generosity not only of people around town who have given up their time and money, but our community and the Christy Houston Foundation, others who helped us achieve this. It really is a beautiful state-of-the-art facility, and if you haven't seen it, we'd love to come out and have you take a tour.
You know, I've been in, and just to see the names on the walls of the people in the community who actually helped make that possible, without their contribution and dedication to what you're trying to do, you would be without a facility, basically.
That's right.
Sean, the change here, adding staff, all of these things are great. And what I think we need to get across before we talk about the diabetes workshop is all of these needs continue in an economy that is struggling to recover. But that's when the need for primary care and Hope Clinic is greater.
That's right. I mean, as people transition from jobs, transition away from a job and not found a new one, I mean, we're seeing more and more people end up for periods of time without any insurance, and that's certainly where we can step in and provide that benefit.
We are talking today with Sean Gilliland and Vivian Besong, talking about primary care and Hope Clinic. And Vivian, the as diabetes educator and in a new role, there is a lot of education that needs to go on with diabetes, and the number of people that have diabetes continues to grow. So I guess that means the need continues to grow for your services, which is why you're there.
It is, and really the providers that are seeing the patients with diabetes, you know, they're trying to cover what's going on with them right then and then their long-term management. So I'm kind of helping to fill in the gap where the patients are able to come, and we're talking about, you know, their whole spectrum of the diabetes management, their medication, what they're eating at home, their complications, and I get to spend a good amount of time with them and answer their questions. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a real good service to the clinic and to the patients, and it's real enjoyable to me too.
The some of the other health education that you do other than diabetes, maybe touch on some of that first.
Well, again, I'm new in January, so we started focusing with diabetes, and along with that, I am working with MTSU under a grant, and we're doing diabetic workshops in the community. Future plans are at least on my wish list, of course, would be to try to offer some obesity programs for both adults and for children. That's going to be a great need, and I'll probably be developing some classes based on the needs that the providers see and our vision for the clinic.
Do those two things really go hand in hand? Is the obesity epidemic contributing to a higher number of diabetes cases?
Exactly. Yes, especially with diabetes type 2. And we see so much when patients with diabetes can maintain a healthy weight or lose some weight, their blood sugars are becoming better control. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really focusing on making healthy changes with exercise and diet are going to be common threads in both of those causes.
You mentioned type 2 and type 1, and I haven't had a close family member who has suffered from diabetes, which I probably have. We all know people that have cancer or have or diabetes. It seems to be one of those, but never have been really close to someone who has suffered from that. So maybe a good chance to maybe educate me and some others out there. What is the difference between type 1 and type 2? What is that?
The primary difference is with type 1 diabetes, your body is just not producing enough insulin. Usually we see this on a more early onset with juveniles or early adulthood. Type 2 diabetes, it might come on a lot of, you've heard of gestational diabetes where that's, you're having diabetes when you're pregnant. A lot of times that will lead into type 2 diabetes, obesity, some of the other complications will actually do the type 2 diabetes. And that's on the difference there is we might still be producing insulin. Our body's not able to use it in the right way. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we can manage it with diet and exercise, but sometimes we need to start on medications and eventually insulin.
So I was talking to a friend that has a child. I think they're maybe 3 years old, and you could look at that child and not even know, but they're severe diabetic. So I would imagine that that's kind of looking like type 1.
Right.
You know, so gosh, that has to be scary to be the parent of a child and you know that this is what faces that child or that young person or whatever for the rest of their life, I guess.
It is. It takes a big support system, especially, you know, when you have a child with diabetes. But the thing with our children and even our teenagers, they learn it and they do it, and it just becomes another part of their daily routine if they get that education and that support in something to live with. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and my adult patients that I see are the ones with type 2, you know, there's also a strong family history with diabetes. And so one thing that when I'm talking about them is not only making the change for themselves, but also setting a good example for their children because they're more at high risk for developing it also.
Is it something that is inherited? I mean, do you carry this in the gene somewhere?
We're seeing a strong family history of it. There's, as far as I know, there's no specific, you know, gene typing.
Yeah.
But it does run in families. So, you know, and especially with other risk factors, if it's in your family and then you're overweight, or, you know, you're not exercising, or you have a different, you know, complications, it's something to be, you're at high risk for.
I know it's frequently when you fill out the health forms, you're going into the doctor's office for the first time, or they've updated equipment and you're filling out this information. That is what is your family history, and diabetes is always on there.
Mm-hmm. It is. And the other thing is, some people go into the office and when diabetes first starts out, you don't necessarily notice the symptoms. Now, type 1, you may have more significant symptoms, but other people, until they've actually been told, oh, your blood sugar's up, you know, you're at risk for diabetes, but they don't necessarily feel different. And that's where we're really trying to do more education as far as with the pre-diabetes to, you know, to slow down that progression or stop it with lifestyle changes.
Vivian Besong is joining us here as we talk about the Primary Care and Hope Clinic and the new diabetes education that she is doing with her new role there at the Primary Care and Hope Clinic. You mentioned something about diabetes and obesity, and can you reverse that with a proper diet and losing weight? Or if you are diagnosed with you know, high blood sugar and you have type 2 diabetes, is that something that follows you for the rest of your life?
I get that question from my patients a lot. How can I get rid of this?
Yeah.
You know, can I be cured from diabetes? And there are things that you can do to improve your blood sugar control. But once you've kind of been diagnosed as diabetic, it's something that you're going to have to manage the rest of your life. It's just, you know, it's the same thing with obesity. And you know, we try not to say, well, you're going to go on a diet, because a lot of people, when they go on a diet, then they go off the diet. It would be the same thing with the diabetes plan. It is possible, though, to work on weight loss, exercise, which helps lower our blood sugar, and then eating the right kinds of foods where we can minimize the complications and also reduce how many medications we're taking. So, you know, our goal then when we're having trouble with our blood sugars would be to be able to manage it with diet and exercise versus getting on the medications.
Mm-hmm.
So
now the constant pricking of the finger, and not constant, but, you know, that is to check the blood sugar level. Is that what that's doing?
It is. It gives us a real good clue to how well we're maintaining our blood sugars. And our blood sugars vary during the day, depending on when we've eaten and if we've exercised and what types of food that we've eaten. So what we're trying to do is, you know, we have to kind of see how well we can manage our blood sugar with our diet and exercise. And if we can manage them in the levels that the practitioners think are healthy values for us, then we're doing good. If not, we're going to have to start adding medication in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and part of the workshops that we're teaching is we really want to teach self-management, because the people with diabetes, they have the major role in their care and how it's going to progress and how it's managed.
Now, when I was really young, my grandparents, who on one side of the family, I didn't understand what they were doing, but they had to take the shots and things of that nature. That's, you know, before I really understood and didn't really have to look after their care or something of that nature. But we've really changed how all of the whole process is. I mean, that was 25 years ago. The equipment that's used, the blood sugar testing and all of that has changed in very recent years too, hasn't it?
It has. And, you know, I think one of the big changes that we've had is, before, if you were diabetic, you couldn't ever have sweets. You couldn't have sugars. You couldn't have potatoes. I still have patients come in and go, I can't eat bread. You know, we've found out now that all of these starches do get broken down into the blood sugar, and they all pretty much affect us the same way. That being said, there's certain foods that provide us more nutritive value and more vitamins and minerals than, say, sodas or cakes. So, but what's possible now is we can try to work all of that into a meal plan, you know, by making wise choices. And and you know, the other thing is with the exercise also, we've become a society that doesn't exercise as much as our grandparents did when they were out working in the fields and, you know, working on the farms, and they didn't have the TV and the computers and all of that. So, but if we can put that back into our lifestyles now, that's also going to help us manage our blood sugar.
You know, I've often wondered, you know, someone you'll hear, well, my blood sugar is low, and I need you know, a small piece of candy or something like that. Is that to kind of give a jump start back to a more normal level?
It is. You know, our patients with diabetes, they struggle. I mean, you think, oh, they have high blood sugar, but we also have to really watch for hypoglycemia, which would be low blood sugar. And this can be caused from not eating. You know, one of the main things for diabetics is to eat 3 meals a day, to eat at regular times because of the medication. Because if they're taking their medication, it's going to lower their blood sugar. And then if they don't eat, it's going to lower it lower than we want it to be. And they might start feeling shaky or symptomatic. And so we do recommend they carry a remedy food, mm-hmm. And check that blood sugar. And if it is low, to go ahead and have that.
So that's that's for someone who is suffering from low blood sugar. And is that primarily someone who is on medication that they really have to watch that more closely, or someone who's not, do they have to do the same? Kind of a hard question.
It is kind of a hard question because it's individualized.
Sure.
But and that's what I have patients all the time. Why is my blood sugar high in the morning? And I said, well, without knowing what medicine you took and when you took it and what you ate, and well, I didn't eat anything. And I'm like, well, what did you eat for dinner? And then it comes out, well, I had, you know, 2 pieces of cake and hot chocolate, and you know, so. For the most part, and we do, there are people that have hypoglycemia that do not have diabetes, and sometimes, so that can be separated. But with the diabetics, a lot of times it's caused by not taking the medication and then not eating, skipping a meal, or not taking that snack.
There is a lot of education that has to go into from the first diagnosis of you are a type 2 diabetic, let's say, and then. I guess there are many phases that patient will go through, but it's you have to constantly educate yourself on how do I keep this regulated, whether it's with medication or diet or whatever the case may be.
You do. And, you know, we tell our patients, you need to eat at regular times, and you need to exercise, you need to take your medicine at regular times. But everything comes up in our lives where we can't always eat breakfast at the same time every day, or we get sick, which can also make our blood sugar go up, or we can't eat, or, you know, so that's why we really want to focus on managing the whole disease process and making the best choices throughout the day.
Well, I guess we've kind of hit a mini workshop here with some of the questions, but, you know, I find it fascinating. I know that if I have these questions, that there are others that have them as well, and that's what's really great about partnering with MTSU to put on these workshops.
It is, and we actually went out to training at Stanford. This is a Stanford Medical School University program, and it's a 6-week course, 2.5 hours each time. And we go through managing all different things, diet, we talk about exercise, we talk about stress, which can raise our blood pressure. We talk about talking to your practitioner, meal planning, you know, handling difficult emotions. And so it's just a wide gamut. And what we try to do is really teach self-management tasks. So,
you know, I've had issues with my weight in the past, and the biggest thing is you know, well, you can have that, or, you know, and I'm sure that diabetics have to go through that same thing. I mean, it's a change of mindset, a change of diet, constantly aware, but you know, you have to have a good support base behind you for all of that.
You do, and it really helps to have some accountability there too, and that's one of the really neat things about the workshops, is because when we have a problem, we kind of throw it out to the group. And the group will say, well, this is what's worked for me, or, you know, this is where you can get your blood glucose strips in a cheaper place, or, Today, we just started one at Patterson Park, and, you know, one of the participants was like, okay, anybody who wants to walk, the mall opens at 8:30 in the mornings, and you can walk, and then you can sit and talk for 2 hours with everybody. So, you know, it's a lot of problem solving and support with the community, and then, you know, with my role at the clinic, too, sometimes the patients just need a little bit of individually checking in or a phone call just to say, hey, how are you doing on this? And,
sure.
And they might not have been doing real good that week until they get that phone call and they're like, oh yeah, okay, well, let me confess first, you know, what I ate last night, but today I'm doing good. So it's that kind of thing.
How does someone participate in the workshops? Where are they? And maybe give us some of those details.
Okay. We have several still coming up, and we have one coming, the locations we still have available. We have one at Smyrna Library, Bel Air Church, Adams Place, and we're going to have another one at MTSU. The first session is full. And this, they can call the MTSU Center for Health and Human Services and ask to speak to Cindy, and that phone number is 904-8342.
And are they in the next few weeks or spread out through the year? How does that
they
work?
They are in the next few weeks. Right now we are teaching three. We have one at the St. Clair Senior Citizen Center, one at our Primary Care and Hope Clinic, and we just started one at Patterson Park. The one we have one at MTSU in Smyrna starting in about a couple of weeks, and then Bel Air and Adams Place will be starting in the next few months. Mm. And again, they are free to the public. And so they're a lot of fun. I enjoy getting to meet everybody, and we encourage you to call and sign up.
I'm sure there will be many workshops. You know, this is just the beginning, obviously.
It is the beginning. A part of our Stanford training, we were trained as master trainers, so we plan to hold a leader workshop where we're going to train other leaders to continue the workshops in the community.
Sure. Very good. If someone has questions, can they call you? Anyone who is maybe struggling with this and now know that there's a diabetes educator at the Primary Care and Hope Clinic?
They sure can. Our number at the clinic is 893-9390, and they can ask to talk to me, Vivian Besong, and they'll take a message if I'm not there. And I've had some interesting calls already. I had a man at that owned a travel center call and want to know about what kind of healthy snacks to provide for the people coming in. And so I welcome those calls. And if I don't get back to you right away, I may be in a workshop, but I'll try to give you a call back and give you an answer.
That's 893-9390. And again, what is the number over at MTSU?
It is 904-8342. And that's the Health and Human Services at MTSU. You can ask for Cindy, or anybody in that office can help you.
Very good, Vivian. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
You too. Thank you.
And Sean, good luck in everything. And anytime we can help pass the word along about all the great things going on at Primary Care and Hope Clinic, be sure to give us a shout.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Sean Gilliland and Vivian Besong joining us from the Primary Care and Hope Clinic here on WGNS Talk Radio.
Rutherford Issues on the Good Neighbor Network, WGNS, FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450 and TV 11.